Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
House Democrats narrow their impeachment case against Donald Trump to two articles, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, with a floor vote likely next week. Why the so-called skinny impeachment, and how is this playing politically? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with my colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hey there, Kim.
Hi, Paul.
And the one and only Kyle Peterson. Hi, Kyle.
Hello, hello.
All right. So this is the House Judiciary Committee finally rolled out the two articles with their text, and they will have a vote in committee this week, Gerald Nadler's committee. But I was struck by the fact that after so much discussion about the many things, the many crimes and offenses of Donald Trump that Democrats had been broadcasting, including bribery, extortion, quid pro quo, generalized corruption through the Emoluments Clause, obstruction of justice through the Mueller investigation. In the end, Kim, they whittled this down to a very general article called abuse of, they're essentially describing as abuse of power, abuse of office in the Ukraine incident, the phone call, the withdrawal for a time, not withdrawal, the delay in the delivery of military aid, and the demand that the president, well, he didn't make a demand, really. He made a request, asked a favor for an announcement of a corruption investigation in Ukraine. That's one plank. The other one is obstruction of Congress for essentially resisting the subpoenas that the Congress had sent out as part of its impeachment investigation. And I guess the threshold political question is, why reduce it to just these two?
Well, I was just smirking, Paul, before we got on. I was reading the New York Times coverage of this, and they explain that House Democrats opted not to charge Mr. Trump with bribery or extortion, as they had contemplated, because those are criminal charges, and using those terms would invite debate about the statutory elements and judicial precedents.
Well, That was the Times summary, right? Right.
So, in essence, the Times is acknowledging that under statute and under judicial precedent, nothing that the president has done here rises to an obvious crime, and that the Democrats have now acknowledged this too by instead coming up with this catch-all abuse of power argument. And that way they don't have to try to fit the specifics of what Donald Trump did or didn't do into anything from a legal framework. They can just say you abused the power of your office. I think what's striking about this and concerning about this is, if this is going to be the new standard for impeachment, hey, you as a president abused your powers, we're going to have a lot of impeachments down the road.
Yeah, the phrase that comes to mind, Kyle, to me is, honey, we shrunk impeachment. It's the standards here do seem to be diminished. I will cite Jonathan Turley, who testified to Congress, who pointed out that each of the three previous presidential impeachment had somebody. There was part of the articles was an unlawful act by violating a statute. In the case of Andrew Johnson, it was the Tenure of Office Act by firing a cabinet official. In the case of, by the way, that law was eventually found unconstitutional. But at the time, he violated the statute. Then there was, in the Nixon case, clear evidence at the end of obstruction of justice. And in the Bill Clinton case, there were clear, I mean, I think the facts are undisputed that the president lied under oath in a criminal proceeding, which he committed perjury. And that was one of the articles. Here, there's going to be no criminal statute. Now, I know people will say under the Constitution, you don't have to have a criminal statute violated. That's true. It's high crimes and misdemeanors. which is generally undefined. It mentions treason and bribery. Treason is defined, but bribery is not. So it is at base a political exercise, but nonetheless, this is a real difference. This impeachment from those precedents,
right? And then abuse of power and impeachment becomes in the eye of the beholder, which is a tough thing. I mean, is this going to be a every 4 or 8 year exercise now?
Are you worried about that?
I mean, maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but yeah, I think that, it seems like every president since, for the last 20 years, there has been some elements of the opposition that has talked about impeachment, and a broadening of that out from beyond the fringes on either side, I think is a real concern. I mean, some of this also may reflect the political realities within Nancy Pelosi's Democratic caucus. She has some of her, the members that make up her majority from red districts, Trump districts, or moderate districts, and she wants to keep them on board too. I mean, reportedly there's a group of about 10 Democrats who, even up to the very last moment, were pushing the idea of, maybe we should just censure the president, and that's sort of untenable at this point given the road that Pelosi has led her caucus down. But she seems to want to keep them on board for this rather than throwing the whole kitchen sink at Trump.
The virtue of having some kind of the discipline of a criminal statute, Kim, as part of an impeachment proceeding, is that it has some definition. It is, offenses are clear in some sense, whereas under abuse of power, it is, as you and Kyle have suggested, it is essentially however you want to define abuse of power. And whether or not this episode in Ukraine qualifies, I've been critical of the phone call. I don't think that the president should have done what he did with Ukraine. I think it's so doubt in our relationship with Ukraine. But every single president at some point will ask some kind of action from a foreign leader that would benefit that president, that American president, politically. And therefore personally, in the sense that re-election is personal. So this strikes me as something that could be broadly applied to a lot of presidents.
Well, right. You get to another point, which is that we are redefining the powers of the presidency in a way in which you could, as you just note, make routine diplomacy a constant impeachable threat. Look, every single time somebody makes a request or a demand of a foreign country, and we do that every day of the week, the main reason is for a policy benefit. But look, let's be honest, if that policy is successful, or if the president can say this policy went into effect under his watch, it's supposed to help you politically as well. Almost every action a president takes has the dual purpose of both being a policy benefit and national benefit and personal benefit. So this is kind of a scary new way of looking at that kind of political operation. You know, I would also point out the other reason too that people have always tried to tie their impeachment inquiries to some sort of criminal act is because it helps your case with the American people. And, we say this a lot, but the act of impeachment is a political process. And the measure of its success is, do you convince a sizable portion of the American public that you are right in taking such a grave step? And I think that's why you see Democrats struggling to sell that case to everyone, because they haven't convinced them. And this is yet another reason why.
We're talking about the impeachment of Donald J. Trump, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kyle Peterson and Kim Strassel. And Kyle, we're talking about the first article of impeachment related to abuse of power. And the article itself makes reference to two specific consequences of the president's Ukraine actions, one of which is that it jeopardized national security, and the second that it threatened to undermine the integrity of U.S. elections. Both of those are strained statements in the sense that I don't think that even if the president had withheld aid altogether from Ukraine, the only thing that would have happened in terms of U.S. policy is it would have reverted to what it was when Barack Obama was president, when it was Donald Trump who actually delivered Javelin anti-tank weapons to the Ukrainians. Barack Obama had said no. So you have to say, well, how would this have jeopardized national security, as the claim is? And then the integrity of elections, I guess the implication is that had they announced a corruption probe against Joe Biden in Ukraine, then that somehow would have influenced the 2020 election. But Trump wouldn't have had any idea whether or not there was even be a much of an investigation, even if they announced it, and then what the results would be, and then if anybody would even care.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is the Democrats are stretching things rhetorically in a lot of ways. I mean, so Adam Schiff was making a similar case when he was pushed on why this process is moving so fast. He said essentially, well, you know, we got to get this done. We can't let Trump meddle in another election, you know, referring to 2020.
And that was related to the second article of impeachment, because the second article says that we are resisting him, that the president should be impeached because he is resisting our subpoenas. And of course, the response to that was, well, you're not even pursuing this in court. You withdrew your subpoena for John Bolton and Charlie Kupperman and other senior Trump officials. So why don't you just see how the court case plays out? And that was, you're referring now to Schiff's response to that.
Right. And Nancy Pelosi made a similar sort of move. So, I mean, we talk about this as the skinny impeachment. There had been some discussion about whether anything from the Mueller report was going to be in there. It wasn't. So similarly, Nancy Pelosi was asked, why is this going so fast? And she said, quote, we're not moving with speed. What was it? 2.5 years ago, they initiated the Mueller investigation. So she's throwing it back all the way to that. So, I mean, what I think they're trying to do here is, I mean, the what's actually in the articles themselves are pretty narrow. But rhetorically, they're throwing in everything that they can present Trump ever having done bad. And they're counting on people to remember the Trump controversies and that the fact that he was impeached, and not really the details of what is in the actual articles.
Which suggests they're impeaching him because they just don't like Donald Trump, as opposed to, yeah, I mean, that's the implication of all of this rhetoric. But I want to be specific about what Schiff said, Kim. Here's what he said at the press conference. The argument, why don't you just wait? That is, why doesn't Congress wait to see how the court case plays out, amounts to this. Why don't you just let him, that's Trump, cheat in one more election? Why not let him cheat just one more time? Why not let him have foreign help just one more time? That is what that argument amounts to, end quote. But what Schiff is saying is that Trump was illegitimately elected the first time, the implication being with Russian help, and now he'd just be illegitimately elected a second time.
Exactly. And, you know, by the way, they get into this in their articles of impeachment. They did manage to sneak in there in the first article about abuse of power. They describe what they say Donald Trump did with Ukraine. And they say these actions were consistent with President Trump's previous invitations of foreign interference in United States elections. So, you know, this is their way of hearkening back to Mueller, as Kyle was saying.
But Mueller said there was no collusion.
I know. So, by the way, there are so many aspects of Adam Schiff's statement that don't make any logical sense, that being the first one, because he didn't cheat the last time around. But also, look, it goes back to your point about hypotheticals. Like Donald Trump, nothing came out of this request that he made. We still don't know if the Ukraine is ever going to look at the Bidens. And even if they did look at the Bidens, what they would release about the Bidens. Maybe it wouldn't be helpful to Donald Trump. So So
right.
What Adam Schiff doesn't say on its face doesn't even make any sense. We have to impeach him. And by the way, they're not going to remove him from office. Okay. The Senate's not going to convict him. And so he's still going to be in office. That the whole, like, that line was bizarre. And it's a cover for the fact that Democrats want to get this done. They don't want to take the time to do it the right way. This was a political pandering to their base. It's not about convincing the country anymore, and they're just going to have this vote and then talk about other things.
Yeah, that's the other striking thing here. This is really a rush to the exits. I mean, I've covered Congress for a long time, Kyle, and I've seen them rush to the exits on budgets. I've seen them rush on all kinds of legislation to get home for Christmas, but they really do look as if they want to get this over with and just throw this this very fraught subject into the Senate. Say they've done their duty, be able to placate the Democratic voters who want this scarlet eye for impeachment emblazoned on Trump's legacy. But please just get it over with.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly what it looks like. We still don't have any direct testimony of what the White House was thinking when the aid was held up from somebody like John Bolton or Mick Mulvaney. You know, it's interesting. So Time on Tuesday had an interview with Andriy Yermak, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, the advisor to President Zelensky in Ukraine, and he disputes some of the testimony from Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU. He says, Gordon and I were never alone together. We bumped into each other by the escalator. You know, we talked about how great the meeting went. We never talked about aid, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, you kind of understand why Democrats are going in a hurry in some sense, because they are also running up against the timeline of the 2020 election. So do they want to do this now, or do they want to, you know, wait for some court battles to play out, try to get some more testimony and do this in the end of January or in February while caucuses and primaries are going on? That's not that attractive of a proposition either. But I mean, it certainly seems to me like this is rushed. And that's one of the biggest weaknesses of it, and maybe why people don't seem convinced, the public.
And that's the crucial point, because from the start, of course, we've suggested, it's clear from the Constitution, that impeachment is a political process. It's political action. One of the reasons that the founders threw out the word maladministration as a term to include in the Constitution as grounds for impeachment was because they didn't want it to become garden variety excuse for impeachment. That is, that you impeach a president if you're from the alternative, from the other party, simply because you don't like the way he's governing. And I think the precedential problem here that I see with this impeachment is that it approaches essentially maladministration as a cause for impeachment. They don't like Donald Trump. They've never liked Donald Trump. And they don't like the way he's governing. And they want to throw him out. And that's what they're trying to do. Now, hey, the president, as you say, but what they haven't done is persuaded the country that this is adequate grounds for impeachment. And that's the problem they have. And I think, Kim, there's a real question whether or not they're going to get every Democrat for this. I think they won't. And the issue is whether they get any Republicans. They'll get Justin Amash, who left the Republican Party and became an independent. But they won't get any other Republicans, I don't believe, in the House. And I don't believe that they're going to get every Democrat in the House. They could lose 3, 4, 5.
Well, we already know that they're going to lose a couple of, I think at least one. You know, we have that New Jersey congressman,
right,
who has already said he's not going along with this. Okay,
I would argue Colin Peterson of Minnesota is not going to go along either.
Probably not. Like, when you look at the district, his district, and the overwhelming number of people who voted for Donald Trump from that district.
He's from Peterson country. He's from Peterson country, Western Minnesota.
Well, you know more about that geography than I do. You Midwesterner, you. But yes, I don't see that happening. So I think the question then is whether or not Nancy Pelosi loses yet more than that. And there's going to be a lot of arm twisting here to get people to come along. We saw some coverage, supposedly this handful of Democrats, 10 or 12 of them, who said that they've been pushing for censure. I doubt very much that that was a legitimate push. It was more about generating those headlines to give themselves some more cover in case they do end up voting for impeachment. But look, out there in across the country, I think that the greatest fail for Democrats so far is if you look back at the beginning of October, which was the sort of height of the hoopla of this and the beginning, the starting gun, and up till now, the polls have not moved. You know, in a best case scenario, they're about where they were, but actually kind of the average has more gone down a couple of points. And lately we've been getting some really interesting polling coming out of some battleground states suggesting that the public opinion there against impeachment is even higher. We'll see. We've even had some polling from a GOP firm, Firehouse Strategies, but said their latest quarterly reporting or a survey from battleground states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin now show the president beating every Democratic candidate, whereas their past polls had shown him being beat by the Democrats. So we'll see how this all plays, but this is going to be a very, very tough vote, maybe the toughest vote of a career for many of these Democrats in battleground districts.
Well, and the consequence, one of the consequences here, Kyle, is actually redounding to the president's immediate benefit politically, which is that the House Democrats have now endorsed the revised USMCA, the trade agreement with Mexico and Canada. Pelosi and her lieutenants saying that they have gotten the support of organized labor and they're going to help the White House pass it in the House perhaps as early as next week. And that president, leave aside the merits of the deal, which I have some questions about. Nonetheless, it's a victory politically for Trump.
That's true. I think there's two things going on. One is that the Democrats, especially in these swing states, in these swing districts, suburban areas, they want to show that they went to Congress and they did something, not that they just went to Congress and sniped at Donald Trump for 2 years. I mean, these people who won election in Trump districts 2 years ago want to have something to show for it. And Nancy Pelosi
wants
to give them something. That's smart, long-term thinking from her. There are some progressives that are complaining, you know, why don't we wait and renegotiate NAFTA, in 2 years when we maybe have a Democratic president, we can get a better deal. But Nancy Pelosi, wants to be speaker then. She wants to keep the Democratic majority. So there's some long-term thinking there. And also it's a reflection of some of the concessions, I think, that, Trump has made here. Some of the provisions on union labor and minimum wage rules in Mexico are things that Democrats have wanted, and they want this to be the template for future trade deals. They want future trade deals not to be just about trade, but to be about exporting American environmentalist and union regulations to countries whose regulatory frameworks are not as strong on those issues. So they can plausibly, I think, also sell this as a win to their bases, not just as something to talk about other than impeachment.
All right. But as a threshold issue, Kim, politically, do you think Pelosi would be supporting the USMCA without impeachment?
Not in a heartbeat. You know, look, Pelosi's entire strategy since retaking the gavel has been to deny Donald Trump any bipartisan victories. You know, and that was, I think it's a cynical approach to politics, but it was the approach Democrats have been maintaining since the start, the notion that they're not going to give him anything. They want to pass their own agenda, even if it doesn't become law, even if the president doesn't sign it and say, look, see, if we simply own the White House, these are the kind of wonderful things you would be getting. See how we govern in the House. She hasn't been able to do that. Impeachment has sucked the oxygen out of the city. And so now suddenly, yes, there is a motive to do a kind of high profile issue item. And even if it gives Trump a victory, they at least get half share of the victory, and especially those members in some of those more vulnerable districts.
Yeah, that they, when you get an achievement incumbent with that is bipartisan, typically the incumbents of those parties, both those parties get the credit. Well, all right. Thank you all. We shall be, we'll follow the votes as they occur in the committee on Thursday, and we'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.